One man who knows what it's like to play on the big stage in Western Australia, of course, and he picked up a lazy premiership with the Melbourne Demons, and he's now got a book out, and I'm talking about Max Gawn, and he has a book called The Captain's Diary. He's been kind enough to join us on Mornings on SEN. Max, appreciate your time, and a belated congratulations, mate. A wonderful year, 2021, for the Demons, and wonderfully led by yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Goss. It was an incredible year over in your state. Really put on a show for us. We were able to play 3 or 4 weeks of really exciting football, and I still talk about it today. Even though the Melbourne fans here don't want to hear too much about how good Optus Stadium was, it really was. Just being able to play over there in a one-eyed football crazy town, and then it was that good of a year that I needed to jot it down and write a couple of things in a diary. And rereading my diary, I thought, hey, maybe some other people should read this as well. So it's actually not a bad read. I thought it'd be boring and I thought it'd be a bit mundane, but when I'm excited by it and I knew everything, it does make for a good read of how a 57-year drought was done and dusted.
It's an incredible read, and I don't want to do a Matt Doran and an Adele moment, but I've done my best over the last day to get through as much of the book as possible. I want to take you all the way back to the postseason and then into your preseason, so sort of chronological. And you talk in the book about the way in which you spoke to each other socially as much as you did professionally, and you laughed at each other's expense. And you talk about one example, and that was the Jake Lever, where he'd come off the ground and everyone would say, oh, he played a great game, but you guys would quip, or some of the guys would quip, oh, but he doesn't play on anyone. And you felt that was a bit of a turning point for the footy club and the team itself.
Yeah, I spoke a little bit about how we thought our on-field stuff in 2020 was actually pretty good. We let ourselves down in Cairns at the end of the year, and we had a poor start to the year just before the hub. But apart from that, some of our football throughout the year was quite good. So we're sitting there going, there has to be something else that might be what's going to get us to the next level, what's going to get us to playing some really good finals football. And it was probably a culture piece, and it was probably, we all called ourselves best friends. We all were very good at having beers together on a night out on a Friday night, and we'd be very jovial around each other outside of the football club. But the stuff inside the four walls, being able to be accountable for each other, and like you said, just, you can only imagine. For example, Jake Lever's a very, very good, cool, calm customer. So he's the example I use, but it might not have been too effective. And as you see, he probably wasn't. But for him to go out and have a really good game of 10 intercept marks and then come into the change rooms of 10 to 15 people saying, yeah, but I did all the work for you, or yeah, those marks are on nobody. You can see what that would do to him and then potentially what that does to him throughout the week and then next week. So it's just a small little change that we tried to do and talk nice about each other, or when they needed, be accountable for each other and pull people up in it. I mean, I'm sure we stuffed it up a few times this year, and we're continuing to grow, and nothing's ever finished, and we've got to keep growing into 2022. But it certainly did work for us. Just a little flick of the switch in that area.
Captain's Diary, Max Gawn is our guest. Max, when you talked about, oh, you wrote jotted a few things down, it is incredibly comprehensive in regards to your moments and your thought processes, because you go through match by match, but you don't just go through kicks, marks, handballs. You go through little moments, either leading into the week or something that happened in the game or post-match or something someone said, or even someone who's not related to that game. You've gone into great depth. I mean, when did you say to yourself, I want to keep this diary, and then it gets transformed into this wonderful, wonderful book and wonderful read?
Yeah, it's one thing I've done, Goss, since I've been in the leadership group and then gone on to be captain, is just kept a diary throughout the week on both leadership group meetings and goodies meetings, just to make sure we're tracking whenever I can look back on it, just see where we were tracking in that week. And there's a 2021, but I don't think that'll be a bestseller, so I've kept that one to myself. But the 2021 one seems to, hopefully, maybe a few more people might buy it, because the road to ninth doesn't sound great, but the road to winning it, that sounds all right.
I want to take you back to when round one, Fremantle, and I quote, "We're winning this weekend," and you're in the circle before the group. "We're winning this weekend. We're beating Fremantle, and we are never leaving the eight." That was pretty profound, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was two things that were said at the start of the year. One was myself in front of the group just before our last, just after our last training session going into the Fremantle game. I said, we're going to win this week and our win-loss won't change and we'll be in the eight for the rest of the year. And Goody, at the start of pre-season, when we walked in the front door, had up on the board, we're going to win the whole thing this year. So they're two things that's amazing that are how it's worked out. And I promise you, Goody's never said that before, and I've never had a coach, as I've walked in, has telling me we're going to win it. And I've never said that before as well. So it's worked out quite well this year. I'm probably going to try and say it again this year, and we've got to try and match it. But there's some cool things that I was able to jot down and remember from that early time that, funny when you look back and go, geez, that actually worked. And we did this and that and this and that to make that work.
Well, people can see it for their own eyes now. It's the 57-year drought ended, and the captain's diary is incredibly comprehensive. I'm going to talk more about that in a moment, but you've had a crazy postseason yourself. I mean, George Oliver, I mean, has Clayton Oliver claimed the middle name? Is this something he thinks that's a part of what's going on with the newborn?
Yeah, he sort of has. The one that's got a bit angry about it is Christian. He thought it should have been George Christian, but I said you weren't even second. It was George Viney before that, so he was third down the list. He's been beautiful, George. He's 5 weeks in, and I remember talking about it a lot during the lead up to finals. But to be honest, it was probably Jess would have been 37 weeks at the time the grand final was played, so it would have been incredibly. Sort of, I was about to use the word unlucky, but it never would have been unlucky to have a baby. Mm. But those dates were never sort of going to marry up. So it was good that we had sort of 2 or 3 weeks back in Melbourne. And then, yeah, we went in the COVID world. So the hospital was quite an interesting place to be in for we're still in lockdown. And we got a beautiful boy, and he's a sleeper, eater, and an incredible father, Goss.
Yeah, they do get a good air. There's no doubt about that. Hey, Max, just in regards to what's changed for you as Premiership captain. Now, Sammy Edmund and Kingy just before 9 o'clock said, you know, there you were on TV and promoting the book. I get all that. But what about you yourself as a Premiership captain and a drought-breaking Premiership captain? I know you're not going to take it all upon yourself, but you are the captain. You are the face of the team. It was an amazing time. Have you lapped up the opportunity of spreading the love and the year that's been, or has it been exhausting and you're about to jump into a pre-season as such? How are you coping personally?
I hope if you ask me that question in 4 or 5 years, I still stand by this answer, and it's never exhausting. It is great running into every single person that you get to, and I live in a very Melbourne demographic area down in the peninsula, and there's a lot of supporters down this way that are excited, and it's great to talk to them for the 2 or 3 minutes on my morning walk or down there for a coffee. But I haven't been given my Melbourne dosage yet. This day on the 5th, on Sunday coming, I'm really excited for, because I feel like there is something still missing in this premiership that we've gone and won. I still feel like I want this Melbourne dosage. And to have 50,000 potential fans and your friends and family, there's one thing I did say post the granny, Goss, is I literally walked into the change room. I knew no one in the whole change room. I went and FaceTimed my wife and my parents in a room by myself, and it was a bit of a different feel to what it normally, what I thought it would be watching Hawthorn and Geelong in 2008 on Fox Footy the other day. You sit there and go, I don't think I played in a similar game. We were quite different. So to be able to get that Melbourne dosage with my friends and family, and obviously I'm pretty lucky that I get a 5-week-old that can come. He won't remember a thing, but at least he can come and experience the day. I'm really excited for that part to hopefully cap off what I feel like would be the Premiership year, and then we can go on to 2022.
Yeah, the foundation's already laid. 32,000 tickets snapped up in a couple of days for the Premiership Party Sunday at the MCG. Going to be absolutely huge. Simon Goodman might be able to make a speech.
Yes, me and Goody, actually. So we got briefed just before we went out on stage, and we're having a little conversation about who says what, make sure we don't double up. And the sad thing amongst all this is Goody was probably going to mention Nathan Jones, and unfortunately I didn't, and then Goody didn't get up, and then Nathan Jones didn't get mentioned. So Goody will get up. He will get up on stage, and I think I'll get up on stage. I think Christian Petracca, who we've seen, it can be quite embarrassed of his Norm Smith, that he's going to get awarded that again. Maybe by Andrew Embley and not Basil this time. We're not sure. And hopefully he'll make a speech as well.
Poor Baz. He hasn't lived that one down, but he does a pretty good job normally. Had a fair bit on his plate that day. Hey, Simple Brilliance. We've had someone text in. Can you ask about Simple Brilliance, about the term Simple Brilliance? What does it mean to the group? Apparently, Track mentioned it on AFL 360 one night. Is that part of the speak of the playing group, Simple Brilliance?
It's a little bit of a coaching directive. It is what it sounds, to be honest. It's It's making sure you don't go over the top. There's no need for example, the grand final, there's no need for Charlie Spargo, who's played his role 24 games that year, to go out and do anything more than what he's been doing. His role is to get up and down the ground, to put pressure on the forward line, and to deliver the ball inside 50 smoothly and calmly when he gets the ball. There's no need for him to go into Norm Smith. I wish he did, but that's outside of his role. So simple brilliance is just narrowing down your focus to exactly what you need to do and doing well at.
It is very true. Now, just bullet points of the book, and it is we're chatting to Max Gorn about the captain's diary. It's a great read. It is a Hardy Grant published book, and it's a wonderful read. I want to ask you about, you caught a ferry to the Geelong game, and you had to stay in your car. When did that get out? I mean, how often have you chatted about that?
So I live, obviously, like I said, down the peninsula, so it's a long drive to Geelong if I went the long way. So the ferry, Queenscliff to Sorrento was the best option, and we were right in the middle of COVID. If you can remember that game, there was no crowds at that Geelong game, and I think public transport was potentially off for AFL players, so the ferry was seen as public transport, but I was allowed to stay in my car and not leave my car. So I stayed down. There was one family of four that were in front of me and have realised that I was behind them, and they've come to try and get a photo, and I've wind down the window just a tiny bit and said I'm actually not allowed to speak to anyone, and we got a photo of me with the window open and him on the other side of the window, which was quite funny. But I did catch the ferry to that Geelong game and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, it seemed to work, especially late in the game. I love the bit where you took the cup. You took the cup home with you from Perth when you left on the Thursday, and one of your first visits was to Don McLardy. I love this part of the book. It was a very special moment, of course, a former president of the footy club, back in the tough times of the D's, back sort of 10 or so years ago.
Yeah, we all got the cup for a night. And I didn't realise that my night was the first night. I got to take it off a plane, and lucky me, we're in a pretty big lockdown there as well again. And Don McLardy is the only Melbourne supporter that I knew. To be fair, even if we're out of lockdown, I reckon I would have gone to his house first. What he did for the club. In and around the Dean Bailey, Mark Neild era, with Jim Steins incredibly sick and then had to take over when Jim passed away. I think he upheld everything that Melbourne Demon stands for. And when I went there, I asked his son if we can surprise him. So his son said, can you come down? We had to do it at the park. And he thought his son was getting engaged. Actually, but once I got there, it's like he played. He remembered every single moment. It's like he was sore and domsy, and he pulled up sore from the game. That's how sore he was. And then to see the smile on his face, and he still hasn't stopped smiling. So that's what I think when we go to this, like how much enjoyment I got out of showing one person the cup. Imagine showing 50,000 at the MCG. I feel like it's going to be an incredible moment.
Oh, it's going to be huge. Sunday at the MCG, going to be absolutely massive. And I would like to think there's going to be more than the 5,000 there, 50,000, should I say. I think it's going to be absolutely huge. We're chatting with Max. Last few for you, Max. I really appreciate your time. The Little Bay Cafe, I reckon there's one in the book. You mentioned about you went to Waterman's Bay to a cafe. I reckon, was it called the Little Bay or something? It was right on the ocean. You went up there.
That right was on the ocean.
Yeah, that was a time. Yep. That was a time for you.
Yeah, that was day out of quarantine. So we played Geelong. We were still sort of in quarantine. As soon as the final siren went, apparently we were out. but we went back home. We went back to Joondalup Resort. And then I took off at 5:30 in the morning. Little Bay opened at 6, apparently. Ducked off down there with Ed Langdon and Jake Lever. And we sat there, no joke, Goss, for 5 hours on the front table. I had 7 coffees.
You do love your coffee. You do love your coffee, Max. So, Max, where are you at in regards to putting the boots back on? I know you want to get through to the fan day and to the return of the cup and go through all of that. And you're now a dad. So you've got that old man excuse, which I know football players like to fall back on. They can travel a little bit later, stay with their family and their newborn. You've got all that in your kit bag now, and you've also got a premiership. When do you actually get serious about the defence for you personally?
I think the blessing in disguise. We lost Darren Burgess, and he did help us for 2 years to be able to be the fittest we can to be able to win a flag. But the blessing in disguise in all this is we've changed hands in that fitness department, and now there's a new guy called Selwyn Griffiths who wants to put his touch on the group, so we're actually training incredibly hard, which is working really well. It it ticked me off a little bit early when we were slogging away in October, but right now I still feel very, very fit, and we can celebrate the premiership knowing that we're training hard and we're not going to start 0-5 still celebrating. So we can still celebrate it and go to the MCG on Sunday, but we got a time trial the next day, and it's going to be pretty clear that we've done the work. I'm expecting everyone to come out and run really well. And Jordan Lewis, who does work at Melbourne, I don't think he does anymore. I think he's with you guys, but he was pretty clear in saying the difference between the 08 and the 09 Hawks was they came back incredibly unfit, and it took them 2-3 years to get back to where they were. So that's something the Goodies taken on board, and hopefully the players have as well.
Captain's Diary, Max Gawn, great read, great book. And it is one of those books, again, you go through the matches, Max, and I'll say it again, it's not just kicks, marks, handballs and stats, albeit there are stats in the book. It is stories within the story. It is tremendous detail. Congratulations to you. Congratulations on the birth of the beautiful boy. Congratulations on the way you conducted yourself over in Perth. We were very lucky that we had two great clubs handling themselves so beautifully over in the West. And we're glad Optus Stadium was a big part of it too, mate, and you are a big part of it. And I think now, genuinely, Eagles and Dockers fans have a second team in Melbourne, and you as a favourite non-West Australian player.
Thanks, Joss. It certainly felt like that when we were over there. And there is stats in the book. I try and keep them to a minimum, but the prelim final, I had to get my 5 goals in. So that is in the book.
Five straight. It's just that. 5 straight. Deliberate out of bounds on the full, I read with interest.
Yes, hey, nice smart work.
Have a good day on the weekend, mate. It's going to be huge for the Melbourne fans and the footy faithful in general. Going to be absolutely massive. And celebrate and enjoy Christmas as a dad for the first time. Thanks, mate.
Beautiful. Thanks, Joss.
Ajinkya Rahane and Kane Williamson were the skippers, of course, who were involved in that thrilling and nail-biting test draw, which, completed last night in strange light, strange conditions, and India went from winning it to losing it to drawing it to winning it to drawing it. Here is Rahane and Williamson post-match.
I tried my best. I thought it was a very good game of cricket. They played really well throughout the game, but I thought the way we came back in second innings after second session was really good. Our bowlers bowled really well, fast bowlers especially in second innings. Umesh and Ishan bowled well. Spinners, we all know, they all are quality bowlers. They bowled really well, so I thought, yes, it was a good game of cricket.
All in all, it was a fantastic game of cricket, and obviously the Indian side's a formidable one, and they were on top for large parts of this game. We hung in there and gave ourselves a chance, but in their second innings with the partnership that they managed to get with the bat. You know, we knew that things were going to be a real challenge trying to bat last, and all three results were still at play. Having said that, the quality of their bowling attack meant that there had to be a lot of hard work to give ourselves a chance, and we fought hard and showed a lot of heart to bat through the day.
So there it is, the skippers, the Indian skipper, Ajinkya Rahane and Kane Williamson. Quick Buzz writer is Bharat Sundaresan, and he has been kind enough to join us to talk about a few forms of cricket. We'll get on to the Ashes shortly. But, gee, what a test match it was, Bharat. It was incredible viewing. I didn't watch all 5 days, but I certainly watched the last couple of hours yesterday. It was, you couldn't take your eyes off the screen.
Absolutely. And like both captains said, Tim, it was a brilliant game of cricket. But Before we get to the cricket itself, how good was it to hear the noise of the crowd in the background, especially because, you know, it's test cricket in India. And I know we're not completely back to normal, as we found out in the last couple of days, but it's a sign that the world is almost there. And yeah, I mean, I think the pitch did come in for some criticism early on because they said it's too slow, run scoring's not easy, wicket taking's not easy. But it's generally pitches like this, or like these, which create these kind of thrillers. And I mean, it could have gone either way. At one point, New Zealand, you thought might have, pressed the accelerator a little bit and given themselves a chance. But, you know, that there's a challenge of, batting out day 5 in India, which is, I don't think you can compare anything else to that. So kudos to them for just hanging in there and drawing it.
Did you think that you talked about with New Zealand? I watched it earlier, and they had the night watchman in, of course, and they had Latham and Somerville in. And they got to the lunch session, and I thought to myself, you know what, they're going to put their foot down really quickly then and really just try and get ahead of the curve. They never really got ahead of the curve. They almost dug themselves into a hole, and it certainly gave the momentum back to India.
Yeah, and it wasn't even, you know, when we talk about pressing the accelerator, it doesn't mean you want to start jumping out to the spinners and try to, like, hit them over the top. But just the second half of that second session, Tim, they just went into that shell that you speak about where they weren't even looking for singles. It was just a survival. And, you know, batting in India when you're surrounded by a lot of those fielders and a lot of noise, and not just from the crowd, but from those guys around you, can push you into that almost a level of cynicism with the bat, where you just feel like, ah, that ball has my name on it. Just ask the English batters. They always seem to go there with that mindset. But I thought they could have been slightly more positive and almost finished this game in a more dominant fashion, even if they didn't get close to chasing it down.
And Ravindra and Patel survived. Of course, Ravindra faced 91 balls for his 18 not and 23 balls for Patel. Did you think in those closing overs it was darker? It looked like it was going to get called off early, and then the sun came back out again. Did you think watching it that India would get the last wicket, would get the victory?
You know what told me they might not is the fact that those two Kiwi batters never created a fuss. I mean, even though there were times when it felt like you know, the light meter had shown them readings where they had to go off, I thought they never shirked it off. And every time the umpire said you have to go back to bat, they just did it. So it showed you that they wanted to be out there and showing that confidence. And what a story Rachin Ravindra is as well, right? It's named after Sachin Tendulkar and Rahul Dravid by his father, who grew up in Bangalore. And to come back, make your debut on, you know, basically your motherland, and to save a test in that fashion, it was quite cool. And as social media would tell you, Ravindra and Patel survived Ravindra and Patel to save the test.
Very strange, as it turns out. So no Virat Kohli. When he's not there, how weakened are India? I mean, I know Rahane, as he mentioned there in his grab just moments ago, he did his best and, you know, they're one wicket away from pulling off victory. So close, but so far. But is when he's not there, Kohli, they just seem to lack that killer. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes and no, Tim. I mean, Rahane did, you know, lead India to victory in Australia after Virat Kohli left and 36 all out. So, no, I mean, Rahane's aggression is of a very different kind. It's more, you know, it's more quiet, if that makes sense. But
it's measured aggression, isn't it? It's a measured aggression.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, what else do you expect from a karate black belt, which is what he was, you know, before he got into cricket. But with Virat, if he was out there, you would have seen a lot more aggression. And, you know, he would have tried to get the crowd into it. But having said that, New Zealand is one team that Virat Kohli struggled against in terms of bringing that energy, because they don't give anything to feed off. Against Australia and England, there will be a couple of characters who will feed into that Virat Kohli, you know, aggression and give it back to him and rile him up. But like it happened in England in that test when he said, oh, we'll go out there and give them hell and all that. But doesn't happen against New Zealand, because Kane Williamson and his team, you know, say it is what it is and move on. So it would have been an interesting aspect of cricket if he was there. Now on to Mumbai. I feel weird saying that, because that will be the first test they play in Mumbai since I moved out of India. So I'm feeling a little homesick of sorts.
What sort of wicket will we see over there? And do you forecast any possible changes to either of these lineups, the Kiwis or India?
Oh, I'm sure Neil Wagner comes back to Tim, because the Wankhede does provide you with more bounce than most other venues in India. It's more red soil, so the ball will turn as well. So it depends what, you know, Rahul Dravid, what kind of chat he has with the curators in Mumbai, what kind of pitch they want. Generally, it's exciting cricket in Mumbai. Not often that do test matches go all 5 days, I must say that. But it'll be a faster moving game for sure. And like I said, Neil Wagner will come back. India, I do doubt, will tinker with their bowling attack. But, you know, the big debate is when Virat Kohli comes back, who sits out? I think it'll depend a lot on Ridhiman Saha's fitness. And maybe finally we'll get to see that name, S. Bharat. It won't be me, but it'll be an S. Bharat, like, you know, don a test cap for India. That'll be great, because he does keep an open. So if he does open, then Virat Kohli just slots in, and they don't have to drop one of Pujara or Rahane, because their heads are almost under in the line as we speak.
Now, I should know this, but where's Rishabh Pant?
Also, I think it's the smartest thing India have done in a long time is give Rishabh Pant and Rohit Sharma a break, just like Virat Kohli took a break from the first test as well. Because it's been pretty incredible what the team has done in terms of bubble travel, because they've been on the road since May when they left for England. And I think they just needed a break because, amazingly, the day after the Mumbai test ends, they all get on a flight and go to South Africa. Or as it stands now, we'll see whether that tour does go ahead. So I think they just decided. And even a couple of other players were sent on an India A tour, Hadamar Vihari, who we saw play test cricket here, because they are really focused on that South Africa tour as well.
No doubt. It looks like Pakistan will get Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka and the West Indies was a slow start on that first day of the second test there at Galle.
Yeah, I mean, Galle's seen so much rain. The only good thing about the rain in Sri Lanka is to see their ground staff do... I mean, that should be an art form in itself. We should have like this competition where, I mean, Sri Lanka will be world champions anytime. But yeah, Pakistan, Bangladesh, some new names popping up for Pakistan. And a couple of their guys, Shaheen Shafridi and Hassan Ali, making up for a sad finish to their World Cup campaign, courtesy Matthew Wade.
Yeah, correct. And Pakistan netting just 93 to win. I want to turn your attention to local. If you were a selector, Bharat, give me who you believe would be the keeper in the first test for Australia. There's been a lot of debate over the last day or two. We're just moments away from it being announced. Who would you pick from what you've seen and their preparations leading to a first test, a first Ashes test up there at the Gabba?
Well, sitting here on a very sunny, beautiful morning in Adelaide, I have to say Alex Carrington. I have no other option. I think it's very similar to Pat Cummins being named captain. I mean, he's been the second in line to Tim Payne as wicketkeeper for the last 2.5 years. Alex Carey, if you remember, he even came and kept for Australia in one of the warm-up games during the last Ashes practice game. So I think Alex Carey should fit in. And, you know, he has the international experience, has been vice-captain of that one-day side. And though he hasn't really been flash in the Shield season, I don't think those numbers would really go against him. So Alex Carey definitely starts the Ashes, but it is the Ashes series. So who knows how things will pan out as things go on. But for sure, Alex Carey at 30 deserves that test call-up.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, you know, and I know there's that age difference of several years, but 30's not old to be in that team. And if he makes a good fist of it, Inglis then it could be on a 3-year, 4-year waiting pattern, and then he's got to stay in the game, so to speak, and stay focused and stay enthusiastic and think that he might be the next one, and then there's another young keeper. The cycle of keepers is an interesting one over the journey, and if whoever gets in has got a massive leg up going forward.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the only thing that never changed in cricket, right? Only one wicketkeeper can play. Technically, I mean, unless you are... You can get in as a batter. We've seen some other teams play with 3 or 4 wicketkeepers these days in Test cricket. But also that's a sign of how good keepers have become as batters since that Adam Gilchrist generation, as we all know now. So I think Inglis at the moment has as good a chance to get in there as Alex Carey. I mean, he's been with the team. He is a World Cup champion as well. So Justin Langer knows. And I remember Justin Langer, I think doing some work with him back when they had just come back from their tours, I'm pretty sure then. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, once they get in, the other person just has to wait his turn and maybe do a few Ashes tours like we've seen both Brad Haddin do before he got his eye in, and Alex Carey doing the same. And Jimmy Pearson, don't forget him. You know, the way he's kept and the way he's batted, he's not too far from entering that mix either.
Yeah, well, I hope he doesn't, because I've just done my KFC Big Bash Supercoach team and I've got him as my mainstay, thinking that he won't get the call up. Last one for you, just in regards to, well, it looks now almost certain, at least it's down to about a 25% chance that the test match will be played over in Perth, the fifth test. If it has to find another home and you've got to take your Adelaide bias out of it, where do you think the extra test should be played? There's a push for Tassie, but I just have a feeling that Tassie probably didn't help their cause with their tongue-lashing they gave Cricket Australia in regards to the Tim Payne handling. Melbourne, they probably deserve it. It is the home of cricket. It is the MCG, and they've been starved of sport at that level. Or do you think it should end up in Sydney or Brisbane? Which way do you think it will go?
I mean, clearly you've taken my option out away from my hands, Tim.
It's not going to be Adelaide. You're lucky to get one test, let alone two.
I remember the excitement around Adelaide last year when there was some talk that the Boxing Day test might come here, and then
but
I think people gave up on that 2 days into that news break. But no, I think people realized it wasn't coming. But I think I'm with you there. Melbourne ahead of Sydney for me. The only thing that would have gone against Melbourne a couple of years earlier would have been the pitch. But I think it played pretty well during the test we saw last year against India. It's definitely improving summer after summer. And the one against New Zealand as well. So, day-night, MCG, it's the perfect setup, right, for the final test. Just hopefully the Ashes is still alive. When we get into that, it'll just be fantastic. I mean, and I don't think players are too against, like, you know, playing pink ball tests anymore. So there are players from both sides who love playing with the pink ball. So I don't think that will be a problem. So I think that's how it'll end up, day-nighter at MCG.
I hope the Ashes isn't alive. I hope it's 4-0 by the time the fifth test comes around. Couldn't give a rat's toss bag whether England's in it or not. Hey, mate, appreciate your time. There's plenty to play out. But that test match, just in summary, that New Zealand-India test match, that drawn test at Kanpur, that is what, for me, makes test cricket what it is. It was so intriguing, wasn't it? It was just, if you're a cricket aficionado, that was the absolute pee of a game.
Absolutely. And, go back to Sydney and the way Ashwin and Vihari saved that test match. There's just something about saving a test that I think doesn't get its due, because that's pretty much what you play for. It is a game of survival. And I think that's what New Zealand did yesterday. And that's why I count the draw as a result. It's not a case of, neither team winning. It's a proper, genuine result. It's a show of human strength and character like the Kiwis did yesterday.
Great to chat with you again, as always. Thanks for giving up your time to chat with us on Mornings for Red Energy.
Cheers, Sam. Thanks for having me on.
He's a very good man. He knows his cricket. He knows his cricket. He's not just an Indian aficionado. He knows it all. Bharat Sundaresan from Crick Buzz Rider as well. He's got plenty to say.